We're broadcasting from the Middle Tennessee Electric Studios.
Visit mte.com.
Middle Tennessee Electric.
Serving to make life better
since 1936.
This is WGNS Action Line. Action Line. Talking with Rutherford County newsmakers
since 1947.
This is WGNS Action Line. Now your host, Scott Walker.
With us in studio, we have from Ascension St. Thomas Rutherford, Daphne David, the president and CEO of the hospital, and then also Dr. Russell McKissick, and he is an orthopedic doctor. Now, Dr. McKissick, are you part of TOA as well?
That's correct.
Tell us a little bit about what you do each day.
I am a sports medicine physician, and today I have clinic and I do surgeries. I help take care of MTSU and Rutherford County athletics around here, and helping see patients in clinic, and then, you know, if they need surgery, trying to get that taken care of for them.
And then, Daphne, tell us kind of what your role is each day at the hospital, because I know it's probably a lot of long days.
Good morning. Yes, there are some long days, but this community makes it all worth it. So starting the day, usually with early meetings and making sure that our patients have appropriate safety measures in place, that we're providing excellent care for those patients, working with partners like Dr. McKissick to ensure that they have the things that they need to take care of our patients to the best of their ability, and planning for the next day. And it starts all over again.
As the weather gets nicer, I'm sure you see a lot more injuries related to sports and injuries related to kids playing outside and things like that.
That's correct. When the weather's nice, we're going to be busier on call, that's for sure. So.
What types of accidents come in that require an immediate surgery?
A displaced fracture. So the things we see more often, you know, kids are out on their bikes and they, you know, break their forearm and it needs to be reduced. If the bone's sticking out through the skin, not to be too gross, but that's usually something fairly urgent. And there's some other infections, you know, those type of things kind of push us towards surgery sooner rather than later.
And for those listening, you can text in any questions to 615-893-1450. Again, 615-893-1450. What types of sports or what types of events that maybe teens are doing right now that does lend themselves to those more serious types of injuries?
Yeah, we're switching over to, there's track now, it's soccer, baseball's ramping up. So those are the sports that kind of keep us busy this time of year. Basketball's slowing down, but basketball keeps us busy, you know, up through March. So
everything from concussions to broken legs and I guess compound fractures on broken legs as well.
Yeah, pretty rare to see those, luckily, but rarely I've seen those over the years. But yeah, more ligament injuries, occasional fractures.
So a more serious, like a compound fracture, I can't imagine going through that. First of all, as a parent, seeing that, but do kids usually pass out when something like that occurs?
It just depends. Some of them are fairly stoic and some of them you have to really calm them down, but it seems like most of the kids I've taken care of, and to be honest, I've seen those rarely on the sideline, but when you do see those, most time by the time I've seen them, it's in the emergency room. They've already kind of been, we've got, you know, a great AMS here in town that will scoop them up and get them stabilized and then get them, you know, then I see them once they make it to the emergency room. But yeah, they could take a little calming down. You know, it's a scary thing for everybody.
Question just texted in. It says, my husband is about to have surgery this week. How has orthopedic care evolved in recent years with new technology?
We've made a lot of progress. I mean, everywhere from being able to do things more minimally invasive, whether it's from the trauma side or, you know, I specialize more in sports medicine, so doing more things arthroscopically through smaller incisions, you know, smaller incisions to heal, a little less trauma to the tissues. Our implants are better. We're using robotics at times, just different ways that we've kind of moved the needle, kind of using, like I said, things like robots, electronics, computers to just kind of double check our accuracy with the things that we're doing.
So with these changes in medicine over the years, does this mean a shorter stay in the hospital itself?
Definitely. I mean, I think the biggest example of that is joint replacement. I mean, when I started, you know, I've been here 19 years now and people routinely stayed 3 to 5 days. Many patients are going home the next day. We are even doing, you know, a lot of patients are going home even the day of surgery now, which if you asked me that when I first started practice, I thought there's no way that would happen. But yeah, between being a little better from a surgery standpoint, you know, help from our anesthesia providers for helping with pain, we really can speed things up, speed up the process.
And you know, the quality of the outcomes of those cases have improved as well over the years with the robotics and other skill sets that are learned. So Ascension St. Thomas Rutherford performed over 2,400 orthopedic surgeries over the last 12 months. And so the more you do, the better you get at that as well.
That's insane. Mm-hmm. That many procedures.
Yeah.
I know my son was one of them.
Yeah.
he broke his lower leg in like, it's like four places and his ankle at the same time. And they put a titanium rod in, I guess, from the knee all the way down to the ankle.
How did he do that?
I don't know how he did it. But he did it skateboarding. And, okay. And the aftermath, though, I mean, he was skateboarding again by, I would say, February or so. I mean, because it happened in, let's see, October of last year. And then come February, he was skateboarding again. So it's crazy to see that kind of recovery. I mean, probably in the 50s and 60s, you wouldn't be walking again.
Yeah, you'd be in a cast or in traction or in the hospital for 6 weeks or things like that. So yeah, it's pretty amazing. Even in, again, the 20 years I've been in practice, you know, how things have changed, much less, you know, if you look back that far.
Yeah, and I guess I shouldn't have said all that on the air that he was skateboarding again in February. Maybe that's too soon.
It doesn't happen for everybody, but I mean, that's a great outcome.
He was well enough to do it. So
yeah, that's
great.
Right. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Another question.
We have our patients test our surgeries. That's for sure. So,
and do they come back? I mean, after they get that initial surgery and they're on that road to recovery. I mean, is their leg stronger than it was before when they went in? I mean, what does the outcome look like?
Yeah, it could sort of obviously depends on the injury and what all we're dealing with. I mean, he had multiple fractures, so hopefully all those heal. You got to get your range of motion, get your strength back. So as long as we kind of meet those parameters, people do very well from that. Same thing with ACL surgeries, rotator cuff surgeries, those type of things. You know, take the time early to allow it to heal and then really work on rehabbing it to get it stronger.
So in years past, let's say in that period of the 70s, the 80s, even into the 90s, what would you have done in those types of situations?
Well, many things either didn't get a surgery, and so, or you know, I would say the biggest example of things that would cause a problem now that we could fix now that we didn't back, you know, years ago, if you tore your meniscus, there would be a large open incision and they would just take out the meniscus. Now we try to fix it or take as little as possible. We can do that through two small poke holes in the knee, and so the patients that got their whole meniscus removed in the, you know, 70s now have significant arthritis, you know, or have already replaced their joints, you know, that type of thing. Whereas, you know, if we can save that meniscus, preserve what's, you know, what's in our joints, then those joints do better.
It's so fascinating to me how, you know, procedures have changed over the years and how people with injuries that today you look at as fairly common and simple to fix, back then they looked at them as a much more serious problem.
Well, and it was, you know, that's when people say, well, I played football until I hurt my knee, and then I never got back to it. Whereas now, you know, I hurt my knee and I was back the next season, you know, or whatever. So, yeah, we've definitely made progress with that.
That's pretty neat.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, technology, medicine, it's all come such a long way.
Yeah.
Another question we had here, what are the best ways to prevent joint and bone injuries in everyday life? Because both my parents had hip replacement and I'm concerned that I'll have to as well.
Well, when you talk about joints and, you know, hip replacement is usually for arthritis. So unfortunately, there is a bit of a genetic component. So if mom and dad had hip replacements, there's a chance you're going to get it. But we know that staying active is good. We know that maintaining, you know, a healthy weight is good. You know, and then varying your activity, you know, strength activity is good. But I mean, if you already have a little arthritis, maybe you don't try to walk 5 miles a day every day, but walking some and doing some cross training. So staying fit, staying active, and then, you know, decreasing the load across that joint by, you know, avoiding, you know, trying to maintain your weight as well as possible.
And this next one, this is more so, I guess, for Daphne. It says, my name's Kimberly, and I just wanted to say that I loved the trust of your hospital and your staff and your physicians are top-notch and trusted by me and my family. Thank you for thriving to serve our community.
Kimberly, thank you for that. That makes my heart warm.
Do you get a lot of feedback from patients like that? And their families, of course?
I do get feedback. I get feedback daily. Sometimes it's opportunities for improvement, and other times it's great family stories in which we've had life-saving, great outcomes. And those are always amazing to hear.
So I guess after a lot of surgical procedures, they may just send a letter to the hospital as a whole and just think all of those involved, because, well, I guess the nurses who are caring for the patient, they may not necessarily be a part of TOA. They're part of the hospital, right?
That's correct. Yes. So we do get feedback on the quality of nursing care. We also receive feedback on cardiac surgeries that we experience through the ER, a lot of traumatic events. And any time that we can improve someone's life or get them back to their family, it's always amazing to have that experience and be a part of that.
And this next one says, let's see here, facing knee replacement surgery, needing both knees replaced, and I have received advice from a close friend of mine who went through the same procedure. Do you recommend having both knees done at the same time or at different varying times?
I usually stagger or stage the procedures. Risk is increased. Some of it depends on the patients. I have done, you know, bilateral or the same knees, you know, both knees at the same time in certain patients. But, you know, you want to optimize your risks. And so if you're already a high-risk patient, you know, it's probably better to stage it. We also know, you know, you don't, no pun intended, you don't have a good leg to stand on when you're doing both at the same time. So getting some time to rehab. And we know that your risk goes down. If you can separate those even 6 weeks apart, your risk is the same as if you did them 2 years apart. And so many times staging them is better, although it's not 100%. You know, there are some people that will do bilateral.
And when you have a knee replacement done, what are they putting in there? I mean, are they just fixing it, or are they literally replacing your knee?
The easiest way to describe it is sort of resurfacing the ends of the bone. So it's not like you lop the leg off above and below the joint and have this big hinge, which there is a way to do that. But for a regular total knee replacement, essentially sort of taking out the damaged, you know, worn out cartilage and bone on the end of the femur, the thigh bone, and on the top of the tibia bone, the lower leg bone, and replacing those with metal. And then there's plastic components that go behind the kneecap as well as between those two parts.
And when you start talking about orthopedic procedures, it seems like that's something that has impacted just about everybody out there listening in some way. If it's not them, it's a family member.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, there's, you know, whether it's, you know, your high school athlete or grandma needing her hip replacement and everywhere in between, we cover all gamuts here, so, and all ages.
And this next question, I don't know if this would be more for like a neurosurgeon, but this one says, I received the diagnosis of spinal stenosis, and really trust your hospitals and your staff and physicians. They're all top-notch and trusted. But what would you suggest I should do in situations of getting a diagnosis such as spinal stenosis, and is there a surgery that can help it?
Yeah, this is, there are neurosurgeons at St. Thomas Rutherford that could help take care of this. TOA has spine surgeons as well. But it depends on the severity of the stenosis, the severity of your symptoms, and, you know, have you exhausted non-surgical treatment? And those are all things to talk about with your surgeon to see, are you a good candidate for surgery? You know, would a surgery improve my symptoms? How bad are your symptoms? A lot of people have stenosis on an MRI, but don't necessarily have to have a surgery on it. So there are ways to improve your quality of life without going straight to the operating room.
So I guess, help us better understand what spinal stenosis is, what that means.
Sure. So there's a space, you know, our spine is stacked. There's bones with discs across the front, and then there's smaller bones across the back, and there's a space in between there where your spinal cord, and then lower down the nerves where your spinal cord spread out. And as that space around those nerves is narrowed from arthritis and from the joints in the back and from discs bulging in the front, then it narrows around those nerves. And then when those nerves can't get the blood supply they need, then they elicit pain. And then so then patients often ache. A common symptom that goes with spinal stenosis is I can walk a certain distance and then I start to have pain in my legs and thighs and back, and I have to then sit down, and I can go a certain, and then I sit down for a while and then my symptoms improve and then I can get walking better. And so again, it depends on, you know, if it means, well, I can't walk 5 miles, I can only do 3 miles. Well, is that worthy of a surgery? Probably not. If I'm having trouble getting through the grocery store, maybe you start talking about doing at least some sort of treatment, not necessarily surgery only. So,
and can you go back and treat patients who may have had like a knee replacement 10 or 15 years ago and then redo that procedure today?
There are ways to revise it, and we have specialists. I don't do those revisions, but we do have specialists at St. Thomas Rutherford that do that. And yes, and it sort of depends on what's the problem. You know, are the plastic, there's a plastic piece in there that can wear out over time. The components can become loose. So some of that is, what's the problem? What needs to be redone? And then there are ways to revise that with different types of implants.
And I ask that because this person says, I had a knee replacement 4 years ago, and it absolutely did not do anything for me. It locks up on me, and it hurts all the time. What should I do?
Well, first of all, you need to look at, so, you know, why are we hurting? And unfortunately, there are some patients after joint replacements that still hurt. And so, but you want to rule out all the other bad stuff first. So a reason a joint replacement, which would be rare, would be infection. So we always rule that out if you've got pain. And then you got to look at, well, what's the alignment of the implants? Are the components loose? Is there significant wear? You know, kind of go through a few different steps to stepwise see, all right, what could be the source of the pain? And then is there something that can be done to improve that?
And there's a long list of things that patients need to do themselves in order to heal properly after the procedure as well. How important are those things that, you know, the notes that you send home with a patient to follow through with, how important are those steps?
The ones that say don't go skateboarding directly procedure.
Yeah. I think for many orthopedic procedures, it's the therapy afterwards. Yeah. And so there's optimizing our risk from a medical standpoint, and St. Thomas Rutherford has a great clinic there that can help us optimize our risk for surgery before surgery. And then afterwards, often there's quite a bit of physical therapy, and sometimes it means not doing anything. So if it's a rotator cuff repair, you have to protect that for a month, or depending on the size of the tear. So yeah, kind of listening to what the doctor says, and then also following through with the therapy, which can be, you know, uncomfortable, can be painful, can be inconvenient. But you know, if you didn't do all the work, you know, my part of the work doesn't take that long, but the after portion, you know, some of that kind of goes back on the patient to kind of help me help you type of thing. So
one of those things that I hear over and over again from doctors telling their patients after a procedure is don't smoke. What are those dangers if you go home and light up a cigarette and then one after the other while you're in recovery?
Well, some concerns are, you know, you've just had anesthesia, so lung issues before and after anesthesia, so that increases risk. Nicotine use, not just smoking, but nicotine use can slow wound healing. And the farther away the wound is from the harder it is for it to heal. So if we're talking about foot and ankle surgery and ankle fractures, tibia fractures, you know, those can be harder to heal. And so so just increased risk of infection, increased risk of wound problems, and then just your overall health, you know, cardiac, lung, those type of things, you know, all those kind of work together to give you a better outcome if we can lower that risk by not smoking.
And then for teenagers, I'm sure vaping is right up there with it as well.
Right. And again, the nicotine is the concern, and that's what, you know, constricts the capillaries, can slow our wound healing, those type of things. So yeah, it's not just stopping smoking and switching to gum, you know, it's the nicotine that's the problem.
You know, I kind of figured we'd have a lot of questions texted in for this, and we're getting a ton right mm-hmm. now. But another one was, is a sprained ankle worse than a broken ankle? It says, my ankle has been weak since I sprained it playing softball last year. But how important is physical therapy, and is that the best option usually for a sprained ankle?
Especially this far out, I would recommend looking into that. So, you know, it depends on the level of the sprain and what ligaments were injured, if you would say that it's worse than a fracture or not. I mean, the benefit of the fracture, it's easy to put the parts back together, but then that still has to heal and could require surgery. Whereas the sprain can take longer. And there are a subset of patients that just do fine and don't need any rehab or physical therapy after an ankle sprain. But there is a subset of patients that still feel weak, still don't trust their ankle, still don't get all that strength back. And those are the patients that, especially if it's been a year out, you know, kind of trying to retrain how those tendons and muscles work around the ankle so that you can trust it again.
Again, with us this morning, Dr. Russell McKissick, and he is part of TOA. And again, you perform the actual surgical procedures in St. Thomas, right?
That's correct.
Okay. And again, also with us today, the CEO and president of Ascension St. Thomas Rutherford, Daphne David. And this next question, it's asking, I may have accidentally scrolled up too far. Let me back up just for a second here and try to find it. This one is talking about the need for a team doctor that helps with a clinic. I'll just read the whole thing. It says, hello, can we ask about the team that helps the doctor in the clinic? I'm sorry, I misread that. The team that helps the doctor within the clinic and how they can run so smoothly since clinics sometimes are a little intense. So maybe you can better understand that question than the way I read it.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, it definitely is a team focus, whether it's in our office or at the hospital. You have, you know, we have an office manager, just like Daphne's running the hospital, to make sure we got, number one, good staff, and then can the staff work together, and then communicating, how does this, you know, how can we, you know, get this patient seen quickly, you know, having somebody that answers the phones and making sure that if a patient has a concern that we can get that patient in and be seen and dealt with in a, you know, quick manner, and then just, you know, them prodding me along to get moving so I'm not running too far behind in clinic. So, you know, all of us work together, but I think it's a combination of the staff, the mindset, and just all, everybody trying to work together.
So, Daphne, on your end, are you sending folks to a certain floor? Like if it's a orthopedic surgery, are you sending them to a floor where the nurses are familiar with orthopedic type injuries?
Yes. Starting in the OR, we do have orthopedic specific teams that work very closely with our surgeons. And then from there, we typically send them to the fourth floor is where most of those patients get admitted. And then they have trained staff that manage them. Yes.
Here's another question we had here, and it's our computers literally just went out.
I saw that, yeah.
But it was a question asking about, and it had to do with the back again, but it was asking something to the effect of their back's been hurting, and they're wondering who they should turn to the practitioner, and they didn't really have an answer for them. What's that next place that they should go to or make an appointment with?
Sure. I mean, I would definitely look into seeing a spine specialist. That would be the next quickest person to be able to evaluate you and see what's the next step, what studies need to be done. You know, would you just benefit from physical therapy? Do we have something concerning that needs to be evaluated more with x-rays, MRI, those type of things? And so, yeah, if our primary care physicians here are great in town, but, you know, if they've reached their limit with what they can do to help you out, then I would look into seeing a spine specialist.
And here are some more details. It says, I'll try to make my question short. It says, I'm only 27 and have already had degenerative disc disease. My mother has crippling scoliosis. Do you think that I am at risk for developing my mother's condition because my spine is already pre-aging and I'm still quite young?
Well, the question is, how degenerative are your discs? And so, you know, as we age, although 27 is young, you know, there's, when you get an MRI, there's going to be a certain percentage of people that have degenerative discs that are not a problem. And so you can get an MRI report that shows, oh man, look at all these different levels that are starting to wear. But then you show that to a spine surgeon, and they say, this doesn't look too bad. So, so I think, having that evaluated and then trying to stay as healthy as you can. We talked about kind of maintaining weight, staying active, doing core exercises. There are some preventative things that you can do to kind of keep your spine and your body as healthy as it can be to hopefully decrease the chance or slow down the chance of that happening. Again, there is some genetic components to some of our orthopedic issues that we have, that if mom had a bad back, maybe you're predisposed to having that. But there are some things that we can control that doing those things would hopefully decrease that chance or push that down the road as far as possible.
Because technology has come so far, are you able to catch a lot of things way before maybe you used to in the older days as far as figuring out exactly what's going on and why once you start doing the MRIs, the CAT scans, and so forth?
Yeah, definitely our tools that we have to kind of figure out what's causing the pain are much better than they used to be. And also there are ways to treat it. And again, a lot of things can be treated non-surgically. So just because you're coming to see a surgeon doesn't mean you're going to the operating room. A lot of people are afraid of, I don't want to go see that person because I don't want to have a surgery. Well, that's not always our first, you know, it's not our first choice unless that is your only choice, you know.
Things like hip replacement, you know, that years ago, that was really hard on older patients, but older patients often had to have hip replacements. Mm-hmm. Today, are those procedures not as hard on the elderly?
They are. I mean, so there's always the risk when, as we get older, you know, medical issues start to come into play. And what's really limiting your ability to walk? Is it how bad your hip is, or is it because I don't have great lungs or have a bad heart or whatever? But in those patients that are active but are limited by their hip arthritis pain, it's an excellent surgery. It's literally the best surgery out there for restoring function. And we are much better at it. It's much quicker than it used to be. Our risks are lower. I think everybody at St. Thomas Rutherford is now doing the approach from the front, the anterior approach, so our dislocation rate is significantly lower. We can use an x-ray in the operating room to kind of equalize our leg lengths and get everything just right where we want it before we leave the operating room. And so there's a lot of that's one of the areas where I think things have really changed in my years of practice, where again that hip replacement surgery has gone to, from something that was, you know, again, like you said, a hard recovery to a much easier recovery and a much more likely return to a high level of function.
You know, it's interesting when you start talking to friends and family here in the Murfreesboro area, and then you suddenly, like I'm saying pre-surgery, but when you know you have to have a procedure, you start talking to friends and family about, you know, I've got to have this done, my doctor's at TOA. It's always surprising to me to find out how many people have had surgery through TOA.
Well, we've been here for many years. Like I said, I've been here almost 20 years. And then even before that, there was two separate groups that went together. But we've had a footprint here for a long time. And I think that, you know, you can name names like Tom Johns and others that have been here for many, many years that sort of set the precedent for quality orthopedic care here in Murfreesboro. And we've only tried to build on that. And with that, with St. Thomas Rutherford, we have trauma specialists, we have total joint specialists, we have spine specialists, we have hand specialists, we have, you know, all the, you know, we've just been able to kind of grow our ability to help people standing on the shoulders of those that have kind of that started this years ago.
You know, additionally, earlier this year, we opened the first orthopedic-specific ambulatory surgery center in Rutherford County in conjunction with TOA and USPI. And so that's definitely showing partnerships and trying to meet patients in their communities, getting them care closer to home, having the same quality outcomes, and then getting them back on their feet.
I love how far medicine has come here in Rutherford County, because I remember when I was in high school, there were only a handful of orthopedic doctors who could actually help you in those types of situations when you needed some type of orthopedic surgery. And you just mentioned the doctors.
Yeah.
But there weren't a lot of choices. And with fewer choices, that means fewer options.
Yeah, I think as our community has grown, you know, our orthopedic coverage has grown, our the things that St. Thomas offers, whether it's orthopedics or outside of orthopedics, have grown, where we can really take care of most every medical need you have here in Murfreesboro with high quality care.
Over those next 10 to 15 years that we have in front of us, there's going to be a huge change in the population. And I know the studies from UT talk about 500,000 residents within the next 15 to 20 years. And then further out, 30 years down the road, we're going to have around 700,000 residents in Rutherford County. Are we going to be, I guess, are we set to be able to handle that medically speaking? I mean, is the growth of the medical field, is it there in order to handle that type of population size?
I think those are things that we look at now in preparation for the next 10 to 15 years. And so we're understanding what opportunity with the age of the population that's going to be moving in here, and understanding what their needs are proactively. And we're planning for those things now. And so, as you well know, we've had a large number of infrastructure improvements at the hospital. And this is just another that we'll continue to add on and actually reach out to different communities. Like I mentioned, the ambulatory surgery Surgery Center at the Westlawn campus, our freestanding ER at Westlawn campus. We're opening an outpatient cardiac imaging space at the Westlawn campus. And then this Wednesday, we go before the Health Facilities Commission requesting a certificate of need for another freestanding ER in Las Casas, off of Las Casas Pike. And looking at different opportunities for us to meet our community where they are, those are the things that we're planning now for the next 5 years. And we have plans for the next 10 and 15 as well to proactively, again, meet the patient and the community needs.
That's great to hear, because I know a lot of people, they love going to the Westlawn campus. They love going to the TOA Westlawn office there as well, because it's still kind of a hidden secret. I mean, not everybody knows about it just yet. So the wait times there are very short. And I know that's going to change in the future, but that is, it's a great option to have these extra places to go to.
Additionally, we have New Salem. So we have a primary care clinic in New Salem, as well as an ambulatory surgery center there as well.
That's great. We'll ask one more question before we head to a commercial break. But this next question, it says, do I do strength training on my legs and arms? Because I'm asking, will that cause my knees and arms and joints to wear out more quickly? I guess they're saying they do strength training on the arms and legs, and they're asking if that's going to lead to future problems with their joints. It says they're already in their 70s, though. So I guess that's great that they're doing that. But are there more things they should be looking out for if they're in their 70s and they're doing strength training?
I mean, I just tell patients to kind of let their pain be their guide. So definitely, you know, especially as we age, but at any age, we want to stay as active as we can. And we do know that as we get older, we do lose muscle and lose muscle mass. And so trying to keep that as strong as possible. The patient earlier asked about falling and concerns about that, but we do know, you know, keeping our balance, working on our strength, maintaining that as long as possible will, you know, increase our longevity. And so, and I think usually if you have a significant problem with a joint, it's going to tell you if you're overdoing it. So if you're working out and you feel sore for an hour or two later, great. I mean, that's because you did a good job. If you worked out and then you're limping around for 3 days, you're probably overdoing it. Maybe you need to consider doing something different.
You know, as I first started reading that, I never expected to complete the question with somebody saying they're in their mid-70s and they're doing, you know, workouts like that where they're building strength on their legs and arms. I mean, that people are living longer than ever today.
Yep.
And they're feeling better longer than they once did as well, into those 70s and 80 years. So that's it's wild.
Right. And what was quote unquote old in the past, you know, we have to kind of, you know, move our needle to, you know, what surgeries we're going to offer to, you know, an older patient that maybe we wouldn't have in the past, that we say, well, these patients are more active, living longer, and we want to be able to help them maintain their quality of life as long as possible. And so, yeah, that's where this all goes together.
It's great to hear. So you actually see some patients who come in there who are in their 70s and they're in great physical shape.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can think of a patient I've operated on both of his shoulders. He had knee replacements, and he just wanted to be able to keep playing softball.
Yeah.
And that was his goal.
That's cool.
Another guy that wanted to keep doing competitive water skiing in his late 70s.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, there's patients that are out there that are being active that want to stay active and want to defy a number and still be out there enjoying life. And so that we try to tailor our treatment to best allow them to do that.
We will be right back right after this short break.
The GNS in our call stands for Good Neighbor Station. That's been our objective since 1947. Now more than ever, count on WGNS.
Hi, this is Tina Fox at the Rutherford Farmers Co-op. Please come see us for all your cold weather needs. We have a great selection of Carhartt clothing to keep you warm, and as always, our warm muck boots to keep your feet warm. We have anything you would need to keep yourself warm or your animals warm. Please come see us. And if you're trying to feed your feathered friends through the cold months, we also have a wide selection of bird seed. That's the Co-op Farm and Home Center on Middle Tennessee Boulevard, just off of South Church.
This is Peter Demas inviting you to enjoy a meal with our family at Demas's Restaurant. With cold and flu season here, Nothing helps my family more than having the Demas's baked chicken and rice soup. It was a soup that was created by my grandmother, and we not only sell it by the cup, but we also sell it by the quart, by the half gallon, and by the gallon. So stop by anytime today and bring soup to your family that may be sick, or a friend that's been sick, or just to enjoy it just because it tastes so good. Demas's Restaurant.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
In studio with us this morning, we have got Dr. Russell McKissick, and he is part of TOA and, of course, does surgeries probably almost on a daily basis at Ascension St. Thomas.
Yep, and our some of our local facilities, but yes, look.
And then also with us today, Daphne David, the president and CEO of Ascension St. Thomas Rutherford. And after that last question from the guy who's in his mid-70s talking about working out, we had somebody else text in and said that, or they're asking, they said, I'm in my mid-50s and I still do at least 10 pull-ups a day as part of my workout routine. Is that dangerous for me to continue doing? And it's funny he said that, because I was talking to somebody last week about pull-ups and how hard pull-ups are hard to do. And, you know, if you Google pull-ups online, I think the answer you get back is that the majority of American males under the age of 30 cannot do a single pull-up. I was surprised to read that, but that's how difficult it is. It sounds easy when you say pull-ups, but to actually do it is a different story.
10 is impressive, and if you're able to do that, it's, you know, just like our 75-year-old, staying as active as you can, maintain that. So I wouldn't say, if you've never done it before, to say, I'm going to start doing 10 pull-ups tomorrow if we're 55. But if you're able to do that and it's not causing pain and you're staying active, then yeah, keep doing it. I can't, and I think it's unlikely that it would be causing long-term issues, especially if it's something you've been doing for a long term, you know. So yeah,
I guess pull-up, that's one of those things that builds up like all your upper body, because you're using your stomach muscles. I mean, you're just using a lot when you do that.
Yeah.
But are you ever surprised to see how fit some of those are who come to you who are older?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's definitely a group of people that have done a good job of maintaining their fitness and want to continue to be able to maintain that. So that's a portion of definitely what we're doing, whether we can get you better, hopefully without surgery or surgically, to kind of keep you in the game and keep you doing the things that you want to do. You know, that's our goal.
This next question, he definitely kept it brief. Mm-hmm. He said, I'm 72. My back is stiff with age, and I'm wondering if any therapy would help.
Definitely physical therapy can help that. So if it's just stiffness and soreness, you know, there's stretching you can do, there's core exercises you can do, you know, there's a lot of different things that can be done to improve things. And then sometimes just meeting with a physical therapist, learning what works and what doesn't work, so that you can continue that on your own, kind of as a maintenance program to keep you, your back and your body as healthy as possible.
And by the way, the person who was in their 70s who sent a text earlier asking about strength training on their legs and arms, they said that they really appreciate that answer. Thank you so much.
Sure, glad to.
Another question we had here. Good morning. I've had 5 back surgeries and now suffer from muscle weakness, and I think it's the result of the back surgeries. Physical therapy seems to only aggravate my condition. Is that common after back surgeries? But she said she's had 5 back surgeries.
Yeah, that's tough. And so it can be. I mean, the question comes back to, why are you hurting? Is there a problem with the surgeries? Hopefully not. Is it relative weakness? You know, sometimes patients with chronic back problems, you know, water therapy, rather than trying to get out and walk 5 miles a day, lower impact exercise where you can still be active but not put as much stress through your back, can be beneficial. And so looking for, you know, elliptical, bike, swimming, things like that to stay active, but we're not, you know, putting as much stress through our back. You know, you probably can't go lift heavy weights or something like that to get your strength back. But, you know, finding a therapist or a coach that can kind of work through what works for your body, you know, as long as your surgeon has said, yeah, you know, you're good from a surgery standpoint to go do whatever you need to do, then you have to kind of tailor what is your body going to allow you to do now.
But building muscle back, back, that's going to help overall with
absolutely
that back pain.
Absolutely.
And I guess when you hear somebody who's had five back procedures, that's probably been something that's been going on for, you know, last 10 years or so. I mean, you don't have them usually back to back, right?
Not usually. I mean, occasionally there are some things where, you know, where you would have things close together, but more often it's years of, I had a surgery when I was young and then this level wore out. And the problem is we're finding that you have surgery and many times the option is to fuse a level, then you develop wear above or below that, and that one wears out, and then it's just a cascading effect. And so, you know, now they're trying to do, you know, joint replacement in the spine rather than fuse those levels and things like that. But that's all stuff that you'd have to work through with somebody that knows how to do that, you know, a spine specialist.
And we are already out of time. In fact, we went over in time. But thank you so much for joining us this morning.
It's been a great morning.
I would love to add one more thing before we end today. On March the 30th, a week from today, is National Doctors Day. And as you see a physician in the community, please let them know that we appreciate them. We are actually celebrating you all week this week.
Yeah, that's right.
Because one day is not enough.
We got the schedule, yeah.
Yeah, and then most of the individuals are going on spring break next week.
That's right,
yeah. So anyway, March 30th, National Doctors Day. And I appreciate you, Dr. McKissick, and our partners at Ascension St. Thomas Rutherford.
So for those listening, maybe write a letter, send it to St. Thomas, send it to TOA, and just say thanks.
Thanks so much for having us today.
Thank you for joining us today. Again, with us in studio, we have had the president and CEO of Ascension St. Thomas Rutherford, Daphne David, and then also Dr. Russell McKissick, and he is part of TOA, and of course does surgeries day after day at Ascension.